Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, we'd like to take this opportunity to thank you once again for coming to the second day of our three-day festival here in this beautiful town.
Panie i panowie, po raz kolejny witamy was na drugim dniu festiwalu i w tym wspaniałym miejscu.
We hope that you are enjoying this cultural event as much as we are presenting it to all of you.
Mam nadzieję, że tak samo jak my cieszymy się prezentując wam tą kulturę, wy tak samo jesteście zadowoleni odbierając ją od nas.
In a few moments we're going to have the final performance on the stage.
Za kilka minut będzie ostatni punkt programu na scenie.
And while our technicians are setting everything up, I'm going to spend just a few minutes and share with you another aspect of this beautiful culture of India. You've seen a lot of culture at this festival over the last 2 days. We're actually presenting to you the ancient spiritual tradition of India. And we brought from India some of the best artists, some of the best musicians, some of the best dancers. And we ourselves have put together several theatrical performances. But there's another very important part of India's culture for which that great country is renowned, for which it is known. And that is its spiritual philosophy. You could say India's wisdom. For hundreds and hundreds of years, many people have looked towards the East, they've looked towards India for spiritual enlightenment.
Od wielu, wielu wieków ludzie skierują swoje oczy ku Indii, ku tej wiedzy.
And rightfully so, because the people of India have been cultivating spiritual knowledge for thousands and thousands of years.
A wiecie, dlatego, ponieważ ludzie w Indiach kultywują tę wiedzę od tysięcy lat.
Just like here in our Western society, we're very intent on material progress.
Tak samo jak tutaj na Zachodzie, jesteśmy skupieni na materialnym postępie.
Actually, we share that progress with the whole world. But India has been intent on spiritual progress for thousands and thousands of years. And now they are also sharing that knowledge with the rest of the world. Particularly in the form of this International Society for Krishna Consciousness. The great wisdom of India is found in a large body of works, of books called the Vedas. But the foundation of all that spiritual knowledge is found in this book, which I'm showing you now. This is called the Bhagavad Gita as it is. This scripture is over 5,000 years old. In Sanskrit, the word Gita means like a chant, or we could say like a song. And Bhagavad is one of the many names of God. Bhagavad means the supreme person, the most opulent person. Actually, God is one, but he has many names. Just like the sun, we've been very fortunate. This has been a very kind of cold and rainy summer, but for the last few days we've actually seen the sun. There's one sun, but it has many names. Of course, most of you are Polish this afternoon, but let us say we have a French person here. When the sun finally peaks from behind the clouds, he says, "Le soleil! Ah, le soleil!" And a Spanish person, he'll say, "El sol." And you say, słońce.
A wy powiecie słońce.
And I say,
a ja powiem,
sun.
Sun.
So are we talking about four or five different suns?
Więc czy mówimy o pięciu czy sześciu różnych słońcach?
No.
Nie.
There's one sun.
Jest tylko jedno słońce.
With many names.
Z wieloma imionami.
So we can also understand from studying ancient scriptures. There's one God. But in different languages, or let us be more specific, in different religions around the world, that same God is addressed by different names. Now, if you went to India, and you wanted to speak about God to someone, which comes natural to you because you're Polish people and you're very, very pious people. Even to this day, on Sunday, your churches are full of people. This is to your credit, this is to your glory. So if you went on vacation to India, and you met an Indian person, you met an Indian family, and you wanted to indicate God, if you said God, Boga, they wouldn't know what you mean.
Bóg,
yeah. You'd have to say Krishna. And they'd look to the sky. Oh yes, Krishna, Krishna.
But
Krishna is a very beautiful name of God. It means the most attractive person. We can see in this world there's so much beauty. Just imagine how beautiful is the creator of this world. So historically, that person, Sri Krishna, he appeared in India 5,000 years ago. And he spoke this wisdom to one of his students, to one of his disciples, Arjuna. Actually, he wasn't just speaking to Arjuna, he was speaking to all of mankind. The past, the present, and in the future as well. Why is he speaking to us spiritual knowledge? Because the very purpose of human form of life is to understand spiritual knowledge. That's the purpose of the human form of life. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna describes there's 8,400,000 species of life. And they all have something in common, all the species of life. We eat, we sleep, we mate, we fight. But the difference between all the other species of life and the human form of life is that God has endowed us with intelligence. Much more intelligence than animals. Why has He given us this buddhi? Why has He given us this intelligence? For one singular reason. That we can understand our deeper, eternal spiritual nature within. So in the Bhagavad Gita, this is the first subject matter. Who am I? Who am I? This is an important question we should ask ourselves. And Krishna explains who we are. He does that in an interesting way. He explains who we're not. First of all, he explains that we're not these material bodies. This is something new to us in the West. We gave the example yesterday when you wake up in the morning and you go in front of the mirror. You see your reflection. And naturally, we all spend a few seconds, a few moments, and we look at our reflection and we think, oh, I'm looking good today or I'm looking bad today. But this is a misconception. Because you are not the body. You are the spark of life. You are the soul within the body. We can understand that with a little logic. This body is made of matter. But matter doesn't have life. On the stage you see so many things. There's lights and there's sound equipment and there's musical instruments. They're all quite fancy, you could say. But they're not living. They're not conscious. Because they're made of matter. Matter's dead. That's just science. Matter doesn't have life. Now what are our bodies made of? They're made of matter. The same material elements that make up anything else on this stage. It's the same matter. It's just arranged in a different way. Actually, in biology, you learn that this body is actually almost 70% water. Our body is a bag of water. It's not living. What gives it the appearance of life? It's the person inside. It's the soul that gives it life. If anything, this body is a very sophisticated machine. But a machine is only valuable if you have somebody to operate it. Just like your car. You can buy a very expensive car. But unless you drive it, it'll sit in your driveway for 10, 20, 30, 40 years. So in the same way, this body's like a car. And you're the driver of the car. Now the problem with our modern civilization is we know so much about the car, we don't know hardly anything about the driver. I could ask you to come on the stage, you could talk about your car, you could talk about your body for hours. But if I say, speak about you, the spirit soul within the body, how long can you stand at this microphone and talk? We pride ourselves in this year 2007. We're such an advanced civilization. But we don't even know who we are. And therefore we don't really know how to make ourselves happy. Just like, will a man be satisfied if he spends all day long polishing his car but he never eats? If all day long he polishes the car and fixes the engine and fills the gas tank, but he doesn't eat, is he going to find any real satisfaction? In the same way, if we only address the needs of this body, but we neglect the person, the soul inside, we're not going to find real satisfaction. There's a classic example given in Vedic culture of a bird in a cage. It's a long story, we don't really have time now, but I'll just summarize it. That once a man, he was passing on the street and he went by a store, a pet store, and he saw a beautiful cage.
Kiedyś pewien człowiek przychodził ulicą i zobaczył sklep zoologiczny i w tym sklepie zobaczył piękną klatkę.
Unfortunately, the fellow didn't notice the beautiful bird inside. He just bought the cage and the bird for a very expensive price, and he took it home, and he spent weeks polishing the cage. He never fed the bird. Eventually the bird died. So our situation is somewhat similar, especially in modern days. We spend so much time with the body, which means the senses, the material enjoyment, and we neglect the self within. And we wonder why, despite the fact that we may be beautiful, we may be well educated, we may be rich, we may be famous, still something's missing. Of course, most of us, maybe we have one or two of those opulences, I don't know. Life's generally a struggle. But I can tell you practically, I travel for the last 35 years, I've traveled all over the world. And because of the nature of my work, I've come in contact with some of the most important people in all levels of society. I've literally met presidents, I've met kings and queens. I've met famous entertainers and rock stars and philosophers and scientists. And we have our discussions. But I always get right to the point. I say, sir or ma'am, can I ask you one question? You've got more than the normal person. You've got what most people actually are hankering for. Are you happy? And you know what they always answer? Well, generally they answer, they say, no, I'm not completely happy. Because we have to strike the balance. We can't deny the needs or the happiness of the body. But it shouldn't be at the expense of the spirit soul within. We have to find out how to satisfy the soul within. So, what is the secret for happiness, for satisfying the soul? Well, what is the soul? The soul's a person, a spiritual person. But more than that, he has an actual identity. All souls are actually servants of God. That's easy for all of you people to understand because you're Catholics. You accept that God is very great and we are very small. Perhaps a better way to think of it is that God is the Supreme Father and He's created us for His enjoyment. Just like you met your wife or you met your husband, you married, and then you had children because that's part of happiness, is to expand the family. So God also created all the living entities for the purpose of enjoyment. We were all once in the spiritual world with the Lord. But all of us sitting here today, we became a little independent and we decided to leave that family, and we thought that by coming to the material world we could be happy. But that's artificial. It's more natural to remain with God and be His servant and enjoy that loving relationship. Although we're very small, we can be happy in that spiritual family. Although we're small, we can be an important part of that spiritual family. just like there's a little screw here on the microphone, it's coming loose. So I imagine unless our technicians take care of it, it's going to fall off pretty soon. Now, as it's in the microphone, it's very, very important. In fact, if it goes out, it's going to create some disturbance here. In its proper place, it's very important. But if it falls out onto the ground, and one of our stage technicians comes along, he says, oh, there's just this little screw, and he just kicks it like that, he kicks it away. Because outside of its being part of this microphone, it's pretty insignificant. You find a screw on the ground, it doesn't really make, it's not very important. You put it back in the microphone, it's very important. So in the spiritual world, we really are somebody. We're part of God's family, and He loves us. He reciprocates equally with all living entities. But if we leave the spiritual world, we come to the material world, we're lost in the material world, we're really nobody. So we want to be happy, we have to go back to the spiritual world. And don't think for a minute that you can be happy in this material world because of our material progress, because of science and technology. Science and technology can make life a little more comfortable. Science has made life a little easier. But it neither has it addressed nor has it solved the real problems of life. Everyone in this world has to take birth. He has to get diseased. He has to grow old. And he has to die. That's not a very good deal. Everyone. You have to take birth. You have to get disease. Everyone's going to grow old. We don't think like that. When I was a kid, I never imagined I'd grow old. Now I'm approaching 60. And the reality of old age is there before me. And then there's death. So you can't find perfect happiness in the material world. But if there's one thing that we can all agree on, and that's difficult in this age, it's an age of discord and, argument. And there's one thing that everyone in the whole world can agree on. And that is, we want to be happy. So we have to make the best use of a bad bargain, live in this world as best we can, but we should know that real happiness is not here, it's there. You won't find perfect happiness in this material world. But just because you can't find water in the desert doesn't mean there's not oceans of water somewhere else. Here in Poland, we don't have a desert. But I've been to parts of the world where I've seen real big deserts. And there's no water for miles and miles and miles around. But I shouldn't conclude, oh, that means there's no water everywhere. So because you can't find perfect happiness here, doesn't mean there's not a world where there exists a perfect happiness. In all the great scriptures of the world, including this Bhagavad Gita, it's described that there's a world which is eternal, full of knowledge and bliss. And that should be our ultimate goal of life. There's lots of little goals we have to achieve. But let us not forget the ultimate goal of life. And put aside the required time and effort to get there. So in India, which is again a very spiritual country, what is the process by which one can get out of material life and return to the spiritual world? Well, I'll describe that by quoting a Sanskrit verse. Harinama Harinam Harinama Eva Kevalam Kulo Nasteva 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 Gatir Anyatha. That in this particular age which we live, it's described even thousands of years ago, it was predicted this age would be very materialistic. The easiest and most sublime process for awakening our dormant love for God which is the qualification for going back to the spiritual world is to chant His holy names. It's as simple as that. God is present in the sound of His name, so those names are very purifying. They purify us of all material contamination like lust and anger and greed. And they awaken a very deep and ecstatic love for God, for Krishna. The happiness that one experiences from chanting Hare Krishna is so great that one can accept the required discipline that is necessary for any transcendentalist, be he a Christian or a Hindu, a Muslim, a Buddhist, a Jew, or whatever. To achieve anything great in this world, you have to practice some discipline. So in our tradition, we follow four principles, regulative principles of discipline. We practice ahimsa, non-violence. We demonstrate our love for all of God's creatures. We don't eat meat, fish, or eggs. We're strictly vegetarian. If you love God, you have to love all of God's children. They're all very dear to Him. So if you want to please Him, you can't kill unnecessarily His other children. We don't take any intoxication. Why do people take intoxication? Life's difficult. But when we encounter difficulties, we have a positive alternative. We become happy by associating with God through chanting His name. So no intoxication. We practice celibacy outside of marriage. And we don't engage in any gambling. But we're able to follow these principles of purity because we're so happy chanting God's name. And you have been the witnesses of that. We were chanting for days, for hours on the beach where you all met us and got an invitation to come to the festival. And we're going to demonstrate it in a few moments here on the stage. How this process is so joyful. We sometimes think of spiritual life as something very austere or difficult or whatever the case may be. No, it's meant to be very joyful. So that we can give up our false attachment to this world and become attached to God. So this is some of the philosophy of ancient India. Of course, you know, I really just spoke on a few verses from this Bhagavad Gita. There's over 800 verses here. And if anything I said this evening has, you know, has caught your intelligence or touched your heart, then please, before you leave the festival today or tomorrow as well, please stop by our book tent. We have many of these ancient teachings from India now translated into your Polish language. And our spiritual master, the founder of our International Society for Krishna Consciousness, has very kindly taken these books and not only translated them, but he's written a purport to each of the verses to help us Westerners understand this deeper spiritual subject matter. I was walking on the streets in town here, and many towns as well, and I know that during the summertime there's lots of little trinkets and plastic things and little this and that that you can spend your money on. But really, this is a valuable investment. This is something that you can carry with you your entire life and benefit until your last day. And maybe, just maybe, it can help you attain that supreme goal of life, the spiritual world. So I thank you for your attention. I know many of you weren't expecting a philosophical class at the festival. But this is an integral part of India's culture. If you go to India, you'll see many men and women. They sit around in little groups at night or different times of the day. This is what they discuss. The motto of Vedic culture is simple living with high thinking. And I thank you for your kind attention. And I'll be speaking again tomorrow night, our concluding talk on the last day of our festival. So, dziękujemy bardzo. Thank you.